Good day and welcome to Goldiyam International Q2 FY26 earnings conference call hosted by Monarch Networth Capital Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need any assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Dani from Monarch Networth Capital Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Shifa. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Monarch Networth Capital, we're delighted to host the senior management of Goldiyam International. We have with us Mr. Rashesh Bhansali, Executive Chairman, and we have Anmol Bhansali, Managing Director of the company. We will start the call with opening remarks from the management and then move to Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Rahul. Good afternoon and welcome to Goldiyam's Q2 and H1 FY26 earnings call. I would like to thank Monarch team for hosting this call. We are extremely happy with what we have achieved during the first half of this financial year. Goldiyam posted an all-round growth of over 40% in our revenues and profits for Q2, as well as H1 of FY26. However, as you know, Q2 also was one of the toughest quarters for the jewelry export sector, as the USA, our primary market, introduced hefty tariffs. During Q2, the United States raised tariffs on several Indian export categories, including lab-grown diamond and natural diamond jewelry, from the earlier 16% to a steep 56%. This policy shift created significant challenges for the Indian jewelry exporters. At Goldiyam, we responded swiftly with a U.S.-origin casting model, a globally accepted and compliant approach that effectively mitigated tariff exposure. Through its U.S. subsidiary, Goldiyam began casting raw gold into unfinished jewelry pieces within the United States, providing employment and job opportunities domestically in the U.S. These castings were then shipped to India for alterations, including processes like polishing and diamond setting. By establishing U.S. product of origin through rulings from U.S. Customs, our production of finished jewelry minimized the net tariff impact. Despite this disruption, which impacted our B2B operations for about 30 days, during Q2, Goldiyam's Q2 consolidated revenues increased by 43% YOY. Our half-year revenue grew by 41%. Goldiyam continues to expand its wallet share among key customers, resulting in sustained growth in the first two quarters of FY26. EBITDA for Q2, as well as H1, grew by 37%. EBITDA margin for H1 FY26 remained stable at 21.6%. Consolidated PAT for Q2 and H1 grew by 42% and 47%, respectively. Lab-grown diamond jewelry exports contributed 90% to the B2B sales in Q2 FY26. Online revenues accounted for 20% of the revenue during Q2, about 72% of the inventory finished jewelry, as on September 30th, was with customers as finished stock of jewelry to be sold in subsequent months with the retailers. Goldiyam's order book position, as on September 30, was about 200 crores. We are looking forward to a busy holiday season despite operational challenges with the U.S. casting model in place. Now, let us share updates on Origin, our India-focused B2C lab-grown diamond jewelry retail brand. During Q2, Goldiyam successfully raised 202 crores through a QIP to accelerate expansion of Origin. Origin now operates 11 stores across Mumbai, Noida, Bengaluru. During Q2, Origin recorded a total revenue of 2.8 crores, with an average store fleet of only six stores. All the new stores have received enthusiastic response from customers, especially during the festive months of October. By next year, with a significant number of Origin stores, Goldiyam will benefit from the festive seasons in India as well as the USA. During coming quarters, Origem will now further strengthen its position in North India and South India. About 15 to 18 additional stores are at various stages of fit-outs, negotiations and legal formalities. By March 31, 2026, the company will have 20 to 25 operational Origem stores. With that overview, I'm happy to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Bhavya Gandhi from Dalal & Broacha Stocking Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a very good set of numbers. My first question is regarding what sort of growth can we expect on the B2B segment for the next 2 years when largely the penetration of lab-grown seems to be done in US, because after a base, because the transition has already taken place, which is reflective, almost 90% of our revenue is now from lab-grown diamonds. So if you can just explain, is there more room for us to penetrate within the vendors, and how should we look at the B2B segment for the next 2-3 years? Yeah.
Hi, Bhavya. Anmol here. Thank you for the question. I'll take this up. So we account for 90% of our sales, but that's only a percentage of our sales for our customers. Less than 30 or 35.
Sorry for interrupting, sir. Anmol, sir, your line is breaking.
Hello, am I audible now?
Yes, sir, much better.
Sure. So, Bhavya, as I mentioned, lab-grown diamond jewelry for all our large customers, particularly the largest retailer in the US, on value basis is less than 30 or 35% of a percentage of their sales. So the segment is still growing. It's just that we are already completely penetrated in the lab-grown segment. So as the industry itself grows, because there's a lot of room for the industry to grow, our focus and concentration on lab-grown should show you that we are going to benefit from the natural tailwinds of this segment of the industry growth. So we still are extremely confident on the B2B segment, export revenue coming in from Goldium and Goldium USA. We believe we can naturally grow at a healthy double-digit clip over a 2-3 year on a CAGR basis without a doubt.
Got it. Fair enough. And just if you can throw some light on the steady state EBITDA and gross margin for the B2B business, how should one look at those numbers going forward?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, Bhavya?
Yeah, broadly, if you can just guide on the gross margin and EBITDA for the B2B business going forward.
Sure. Sounds good. So on an EBITDA basis, we continue to track in the broad range 18 to 21-22%. That's a broad range of our EBITDA guidance. We're very confident of achieving this. In fact, we, if anything, see moving forward, we might have an upside potential for a few quarters, given the transition to the new hybrid manufacturing model where we are also casting in the United States. On a gross margin basis, there are fluctuations quarter to quarter. Either that's driven by, you know, one area that drives that is that there is stock that we of course have sold into the United States, but our US subsidiary has to sell forward and book its own profit in the subsequent quarter. And the second would be due to a volatility of raw material such as gold prices, where we may have booked at a certain rate and sold in at a certain different rate. On average, I would look at our gross margins on a full year basis, which would be pretty steady, if not slightly, hopefully growing, at least for the next couple of quarters.
Got it. Fair enough. And just one thing on the retail side, commendable execution with store openings. Just wanted to understand, in Q1, our total retail sales was closer to 3.2 crores versus in Q2, our number has fallen to 2.8 crores. Whereas in Q2, it was, you know, there were festive season across. So any specific reason for this? I know that the stores were new, but still, yeah.
Sure. So we had a large store opening and large store opening event in Q1, so that has, of course, helped to boost the numbers. In Q2, in fact, very, on the opposite side, there was no festive period. July, August, September being a lull period, there's not really, you know, the general festive footfall that had come through. Also, we didn't have too many new store openings happening in Q2. You'll see a dramatic pickup in Q3, and we're very excited with the new stores that we have launched. October has been our strongest month yet. In fact, just in October sales, we would have nearly completed all of Q2 sales for Origem on the B2C side. Again, that's due to a push, of course, with Dhanteras and the festive period, but we're seeing strength coming in from all stores. And we're very excited now that we have some key mall stores also signed and opened, particularly Phoenix Mills Palladium, Art City Mall, Ghatkopar, and a whole bunch more coming up between now and December end. So, you know, you'll certainly see all these numbers now inching upwards significantly.
Wonderful, wonderful. Just on the total store count, where you've guided for the next 1 year, but if you can just guide on a maybe 3 year basis, because your aspiration was to open closer to 200 to 300 stores when it comes to Origem brand. So, with the fundraise, I believe that the path is now clear. So can you guide when exactly can we see the entire 200 store opening across
India? We're not able to guide on that. Very honestly, the fundraise provides us liquidity capital and investment capital for about 55 to 65 stores in that range, depending on the type of store format that we open. 50 to 65 stores. That's completely under the COCO model. At some point, we will also open the taps for the franchisee model. That will happen perhaps within the next calendar year, certainly next financial year. So we will be able to give better guidance on that perhaps in 6 months. At the time being, all our attention and focus on B2C and Origem is going towards opening, utilizing the fundraise and opening stores in the right locations, best-in-class locations, as much as possible across the country. So we're very, very excited. We have already perhaps signed more stores than are already open. So I think within the next 6 month period, we'll see an easy doubling of stores. Easy.
Wonderful. And all the best for the future quarters. Really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. That's it from my end.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Bhavya.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Dixit Doshi from Whitestone Financial Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, and first of all, congratulations for wonderful performance in H1, given what is happening globally. My first question is, if you can elaborate slightly on the you know, demand part in the U.S. for our B2B business. Considering our order book is 200 crore, which is healthy, but if I see last year Q2 end, we were standing at much higher order book for the season. So if you can elaborate on that.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Doshi. We're seeing good traction with our customers. There is, you know, no issue that we see on demand. In fact, we see Q3 to be, I mean, last year Q3, we had a very strong uptick in revenue. We are hoping this year to certainly match that, hopefully grow it as well, but we'll see as the quarter shapes up and builds up. It's very important for us in this quarter to execute in Q3, to execute on our dot-com sales, which end up being a large portion of sales of the quarter. They are, you know, they are ad hoc, and they come effectively, they come, get delivered, and get booked all within a 7 to 10 day period. So executing on that and delivering that while still casting in US is an operationally challenging piece of the puzzle that we are working on and worked on already. So I think we're demand-wise not seeing any issue. You know, lab-grown penetration continues to grow, especially for all our key customers. We will, you know, of course, just be focusing on our execution, getting our operational metrics in place, working on improving our speed of turnaround, especially with casting in the United States. And I think that will naturally lead to further growth and booking of revenue at Kodia.
And in terms of .com sales, so how we are executing, because earlier we were, you know, getting the order and executing in within 6 to 7 days. But now with us doing a casting there, then bringing the product in India and then again forwarding there. So how that timeline has extended and can that impact our, you know, .com sales?
Yes, absolutely. So the time frames, as you rightly mentioned, have definitely gone up for the .com business. And of course, the back and forth, as you can imagine, is pretty significant. I really must take a moment to commend our teams, both in India and in the US, to deliver the revenues we are delivering and, you know, knock out the kinks for this operating model. Even for a business model like .com, where we are casting single piece items across hundreds of pieces every single day in the US today. On that note, yes, time frames have gone up. We have not seen it really impact the units as such right now. We're seeing a pretty healthy you know, revenue coming in from .com, particularly this quarter onwards. At some point for a few weeks in Q2, we had to pivot .com off until we could manage to get our entire US casting model set up, ongoing and live. Currently, as we stand, everything is on, everything's, you know, running smoothly, with of course a few extra days of lead time that we have to pass on through the customer to end customers.
Okay, and my last question is on the inventory part. So our inventory has gone up sharply this quarter. Right. I mean, is it for the preparation of the festive season in the US, or also, you know, due to, since we are facing this US casting model, so we are keeping higher inventory just to meet the seasonal demand?
Right. So it's absolutely both, where, of course, in general, Q2 ending, we do see a higher inventory every year. Because we are building in for the holiday sales period in the US. But particularly this year, there has been an increase in inventory because of even the US casting model, where we have had to effectively invest in an additional approximately 30 days of gold in our factory by keeping that investment running continuously in the United States. We see this normalize in Q3. We will see this normalize in Q3. We're already seeing that play out. As the gold cycle has now normalized as well with the additional investment into the business and into inventory from our side. So yes, I think it is a part and a requirement of knocking in correctly our US casting model, which we have had to take in order to get the cycle started.
Okay, and just one last thing. So you did mention that we are seeing traction in our origin stores from October onwards. But if I say, let's say the initial stores like the Borivali, Bandra, if we see those stores, how they are performing after, you know, the initial sales, let's say the, in terms of footfalls, in terms of conversion of sale, how they are performing? The initial stores which have completed 5 to 8 months of presence.
Sure. So it's decent, Mr. Doshi. There is, of course, it fluctuates month to month, but we are largely satisfied with the sales and the sales result of even the older store fleet. Most of the older store fleet is inching close, if not crossing break even on its monthly sales. So we hope to continue that track record. We are very excited to also, and very we are very bullish on even south and north. The few stores that we have opened up in the first month itself have been delivering some wonderful numbers, in fact crossing quite a few of the Bombay stores. So the focus as well is now to expand store fleet across the country. Given what we are seeing and signing in terms of locations, both within key malls as well as high street locations, I feel that we are well poised to, within the next couple of quarters, be among the leaders of lab-grown jewelry retailers in India, especially those that have their own company-owned, company-operated stores. And number two, one of the only retailers with a true national presence, where we will have stores open in North, South and West, all three, versus solely being dominated, and significant stores open in all three regions versus solely being focused on just one. So we're very excited that this will help build our brand, and the awareness with partnering with key malls will further help to boost visibility for the Origem brand in the coming quarter.
All right. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Harshit from Green Investment LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, Anmol. Am I audible?
Hi, Harshit. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi. Congrats on a great set of numbers. It was way beyond what the street had expected, including me. I had two questions. The first one being that there has been a lot of articles recently, some state that the lab-grown industry is dead, whereas on the other side, some state that the demand is still robust. But today, I wanted a view from you, what is actually going behind the scenes in the industry? Can you please elaborate on the demand scenario, the supply overhangs, if any, and what kind of customers are coming in to buy your product at the Origem stores? That will be very helpful for the investor community to get some clarity on what's actually going around in the lab-grown diamond sector in India specifically.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Harshit. I'll give it my best shot. First of all, thank you for the comments. Again, I will echo again that I must commend our teams in India and in the US to have executed this Q2 despite all the challenges we had. Regarding the lab-grown diamond industry, we still see demand very, very robust globally. In fact, coming back to Mr. Bhavya's question also, I forgot to mention that we have also started and cracked a customer in Israel, one in the Middle East, and further penetration with one smaller existing customer in Australia. Two out of three of which are also focused on creating jewelry lines with lab-grown diamonds. So I think, of course, it's well known that the industry is very well penetrated in the US and growing, taking over in terms of the middle and upper middle income segments. But it's very encouraging to see additional regions come on board and start purchasing lab-grown diamond jewelry, though at their own scales. In India, we are also, the type of customer profile that we're seeing is, in fact, the one learning is it's not such a young customer. It's in fact somebody in their mid-30s to mid to late 50s. And she's coming in, as somebody who's already bought diamond jewelry in the past, not somebody who's completely new to the category, but perhaps maybe new to the solitaire buying category. And that's on the general generic level at Origem, but we have managed to crack customers across the income segment pipeline, including to the very, very, very affluent HNI customer group as well. So we're seeing, in fact, that customer base come in, though please pepper my comments as this is at our current scale. Hopefully within 6 months, 12 months, we'll be able to continuously be providing better, more color on our customer profile at Origem and in general. On the supply dynamics, we feel that yes, there is a lot of supply, but I think now with just demand generally going up and not so many more machines coming on stream, at least the way we see it, price declines are totally now a matter of the past and don't really impact us moving forward. So we're fairly confident, in fact, on inventory and the veracity and the price stability of lab-grown diamonds as a category. I'll open it up to our chairman if he wants to add on any comments on the supply side, given that he is very well in tune with the lab-grown diamond supply industry as well.
Thank you, Anmol. So, Harshit, I would like to say just one thing, that over the earnings calls that we've done over the past, all the questions were asked about, how are the lab-grown diamond prices falling down, when will it stop, and what's the issue, how much losses do we take on our balance sheet? But I'm very happy to, answer that prices have actually gone up. So in the smaller diamonds, that is 12 cents and below, right, prices have gone up 5% to 11% in lab-grown diamonds. Even though the production is there, the demand has exceeded production now. So that's very, very positive for Gold DM, very, very positive for our consignment product, which is out there in the U.S. We are very sure that in the holiday, in the coming months, especially by Thanksgiving, I mean, in December and ahead, right, most of the consignments will do and turn very well. Now, when it comes to solitaire prices, the prices are very tight. If we are asking for even $10 lower, we are not able to buy. So it means that there is a lot of positivity in pricing, and any further downfall from here is not possible. That would be my comment on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bhansali. It was a very good explanation. I mean, it gives some clarity on how the industry is heading towards, what the industry is heading towards. The second question which I had was, we have seen that recently a lot of venture capitalist-backed companies are coming over and opening their stores into the similar category as Gold DM. Just wanted to understand what is the brand's positioning right now. We have seen that there's been a lot of celebrity endorsements recently via Karan Johar or maybe Parineeti Chopra. What kind of marketing are you guys trying to do through Gold DM, and what is the position in the brand currently?
So, thank you, Harshit. So, we are, of course, continuously tweaking on the exact positioning of the brand and who, we are talking to and learning from our customers. We're also engaging in a research study to understand, because the lab-grown category evolves so quickly and there's so much more talk about the category in general compared to perhaps this time last year, we are engaging in a fresh study to understand where the consumer's mindset is. So in general, though, our positioning is very clear that this is a better diamond and this is the better way to diamonds. Now, that means multiple things in terms of products that lab-grown diamonds truly allow the user to do way, way, way more than what's otherwise accessible in natural diamonds, whether that means unique shapes, custom shapes that are created just for you, unique initials, pendants, etc., that are truly speaking to the exact customer, including specialty shapes. There's a lot more available as raw material and provides the jewelry designer a larger blank canvas. So certainly resulting in customized, personalized, and more unique product. The second thing that we like to focus on is, of course, the price point. Compared to even natural diamonds, this is very, clear what the pricing differential is. But even within our competitor basket, Aurigem is perhaps one of the only retailers that is truly vertically integrated. That means every single diamond that is sold at Aurigem is either grown or purchased in-house, loose by the same teams that are purchasing diamonds for our export business at those same aggressive rates. We then produce the jewelry in-house and then pass on that benefit and that cost benefit to our customers by retailing at a sensible rate that we believe is much stronger. We don't believe, but that is certainly much stronger and much more sustainable over the long term than some other lab-grown diamond startups in the country. I think we're at a stage where distribution is going to matter over the next 12 to 18 months. and we're very grateful to our QIP investors and the investor community in general to support us in our fundraising, because over the next 12 to 18 months, having that national brand presence and store fleet is going to be a big differentiator that will edge us out over younger lab-grown diamond startups that are pilfering in the country. And lastly, of course,
Sorry,
if I can just mention that the design expertise that Goldium brings with our global designs, that too will be a strong benefit and available across all Origem stores, visibly allowing better product than some competitors.
Makes complete sense, Anmol. Thank you so much. I mean, the industry is going through interesting times, and even I believe that it will take some more time to see how the industry as a whole shapes up in India. Well, thank you so much. That was it from my side. Thank you so much, Anmol.
Thank you, Harshit.
Thank you very much. Next question is from Ankit Gupta from Bamboo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a great set of numbers in this tough times. Anmol, my first question is on our B2B business. So, you know, last year, if you look at the festive season and the entire H2B are coming off on a very high base of, you know, almost 480 crore kind of revenues. And as you have indicated, we are, you know, expecting that we'll be able to grow from that base as well. So is that,
you know, with this casting thing, you know, getting settled, as you're saying, in Q3, how should we look at our EBITDA margins for the second?
Sure. So just to clarify, Ankit, thank you for the question. I mentioned our growth numbers on a CAGR basis over time, which we are confident, given our quality, our design, our relationships and market penetration, to grow at a healthy clip. Specifically for Q2, yes, we are coming off a high base, but, you know, we are hopeful and, you know, going to give it our best shot to not just match, but even cross those revenue numbers. Certainly, though, I do believe our margin profile will be very strong, as the benefit of achieving and enacting on the US casting model comes in into the company, and we then are able to pass on through additional costs to our customers at a slightly higher rate. So I believe that being able to manage production with this flow, with casting in the United States, is an edge. We are able to charge for it, varying, you know, certain small additional percentage of rate, again, depending on size of customer and the account size that we have with them. And that should certainly go down to our margins, even despite some addition of cost in the United States. So we're looking forward to that playing out over the next 6 months.
So should we expect, you know, at least 20-30% or even 40% growth that we have done in H1 to be sustainable for second half as well?
No, there's no such guidance we can give. We will grow for the full year basis. And, you know, over the next 2-3 years, CAGR, we will grow at a healthy clip. But we cannot give any such near-term guidance.
Sure. My second question was on the Indian business. So if we, like we keep hearing some of the large players in the industry are entering the LGD segment, you know, and now it seems that they'll be most probably what we hear, they'll be launching, you know, LGD segment, let's say Tanishq or even Kalyan, entering the segment in the coming 3 to 6 months. So with that happening and some of the large players in the Surat B2B segment also, you know, planning to enter the LGD segment and have huge expansion plan. So how do you see, you know, the entire consolidation happening in the industry and, you know, the competition panning out with such large players, you know, entering the market with their scale and the funds that they have?
Sure, Ankit. So addressing the first part of the question first, we would welcome organized retail, our leaders in the jewelry space today to the lab-grown segment. I think it will only dramatically grow the entire lab-grown diamond segment and teach the average Indian consumer who currently is a loyalty member at some of these retailer brands that this category is also now within their basket of consideration when they go to buy diamond studded jewelry. I think that is going to just offer a huge flip to grow the overall size of industry in India, and we're very excited and hopeful. The sooner that happens, that the better. I think the rising tide lifts all boats will certainly play out in that sense. To your second point, we're not at the moment so concerned or focused on, Surat-based or anywhere diamond companies that are entering the retail space. I think over time we'll see how that plays out as and when they start setting up distribution. I will though say that, already being entrenched in the retail industry and the kind of distribution that we have signed on, it would be very difficult for yet another player to keep coming on into the market. So we see consolidation already happening, where we see some brands being a little bit more pushed to the wayside, where large mall developers, especially the corporate groups, are not so much considering some of the less scaled players, I would say. And I'm certain that that will play out even more and even more effectively in the next 1 to 2 quarters. If I have to put it this way, within 6 months, you will have perhaps only 3 players that would have more than 15 stalls in the country in the lab-grown space. And over time, I think the number that crosses 50 may even be under 2. So consolidation is clearly playing out. Those companies that are then below 10 stores, a year from now are not going to be, sizable relevant players in the larger national scale that we are hoping to achieve.
Sure. And just one last question on our, B2B business. So, if we go through some con calls and some presentation of large US jewelry retailers, some of which are our customers also. So they have been talking about LGD penetrating in the fashion jewelry segment. So any views on that, and how much of our sales is for bridal versus fashion jewelry as of now? And how do you see this shift happening?
It's a great point. I think lab-grown offers an amazing opportunity in the fashion space, and particularly even more for us because we are more heavier leaning onto the bridal category today. Again, this was by design. The bridal category in the United States offers a much longer lifetime for a particular style or a SKU than the fashion category. It offers a lot more stability once your investment in consignment has been completed and the life cycle of that item is longer in terms of reorders. Though, as I mentioned, lab-grown, the material itself provides a blank canvas to a jewelry designer. So it's very exciting from the fashion jewelry standpoint. There's a lot more you can do in terms of shapes, uniqueness, specialty cuts, etc. We are very seriously looking at the space within, of course, our current basket of retailers, and we hope to bring some newness in that category and open or grow accounts wherever they're already open within the fashion segment as well. It's a big opportunity for us.
And how much is the sales for us currently? Hardly any?
Be about at a 85% penetration in bridal. 85% of our sales would currently be focused on bridal with the balance in fashion. I think that maybe perhaps would start, hopefully over time, fashion would increase as a percentage of our sales and provide growth as well.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Nisha. All this.
Thank you.
Next question is from Ranodeep Sen from Mass Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for Yeah, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers. I know it's still early days, but earlier you had mentioned plans of onboarding a brand ambassador around the 15th store milestone. Any progress on that front? Given the B2C nature of the business, a strong brand fest can definitely, you know, will be critical towards the growth lever. So any thoughts around that?
Thanks, Randeep. Thank you for the question. So we are working on it, where our marketing team is reaching out to the to a respective brand ambassadors and working on the strategy. I think we're still a few, maybe one or two quarters away from locking this. But regardless, we're working on many exciting marketing campaigns in the coming months to further boost awareness of the brand.
Sure. We noticed that many of the new origin stores are coming up in malls. So are we exploring potential partnerships with tie-ups for the national level malls to accelerate our expansion space?
Thanks, Sandeep. So we are generally pitching to all the key corporate mall players in the country. And personally, I've gone and met, you know, probably all of them at this point, or a bunch of them at this point. I think they are very comfortable, rightly so, when they have the desire to test lab-grown diamond jewelry as a space, that they test with Origem, largely because of Goldiam's corporate backing, being publicly listed in the capital markets. They have a sense of comfort in working with us. We are definitely leveraging this to expand our presence in these key malls. Certainly because I believe the quality of distribution that it offers is very significant and will be an edge and a moat to smaller competition over the coming, you know, over the coming time. There's no such partnership that any mall group would do, but please be rest assured, I think we are setting up Origem to be first of mind in case any such corporate mall group requires or is interested in introducing or testing the lab-grown diamond space.
Sure. And if I can squeeze in one last question, with gifting emerging, with it, just to connect with one last. Okay.
You may rejoin the queue for a follow-up.
Thank you, Rati.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure the management can address all your questions, I request you to limit your question to two per participant. Next question is from Arjun from Long Equity Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Anmol. Thanks for this opportunity. I'm just trying to understand more of what previous speaker Ankit has asked. You have got through this casting strategy of yours. Would there have been some transitional frictions to get into that? So because of that, we could see margins still lingering around where we are right now for the next one or two quarters, because you mentioned like you might see it in 6 months or so. So just wanted to understand, are you experiencing any transitional frictions here?
So thank you for the question, Arjun. I'll just clarify. We have had to move to a dual casting method or dual production method given the tariffs in the United States. That means casting in the U.S. So that all our production is U.S. product of origin. We modify or alter the pieces in India with polishing, finishing, and diamond setting here, and then ship back to the United States. Those original castings that move back through our distribution to retailers across the country. In this process, of course, there is a casting cost that we have had to incur and bear, but we have, of course, save on the entire tariff amount in order to bear this cost. Now, what's happened is as we've cracked the model, as we've, you know, been able to open up and work with suppliers in the United States, and then, you know, start casting over there. We went to our customers and said that we do have higher costs. We will need an increment on our pricing with them. And various, you know, customers, we've offered various deals as a slight increment to our costing, which has, of course, all been accepted. That's why we see that as we are now able to minimize the tariff through this casting methodology, we believe that items that are now casted in the US and shipped at a slightly higher price to customers will provide us a gross margin or a gross and EBITDA margin advantage in the coming couple of quarters. So that's where we currently stand. And I hope that clarifies the question, Arjun.
Yeah, just to elaborate that part a little more. So it's been like 2 or 3 months that we have been trying to go over this transition friction, right? So I'm assuming we are past that, and now whatever comes forth, we would get a full impact of the casting strategy we adopted. Because if we do a calculation, maybe on a rough side, we might have 1,000 basis points advantage because of this whole thing. Is my understanding right here? Because it's been a couple of months now we have done through the, gone through the strategy.
So I can't comment on any margin change. In fact, you know, I have to sit down and provide color on that post, seeing how sales order goes through. But commenting on the first part of your question, yes, in Q3, all products are continuously running with the US casting model. So that system is now well set in place. Of course, there is, it's just operationally complex and much more of a headache than in terms of the day-to-day work. But again, credit to our teams that have taken it upon a challenge. It is fully running in Q3 and moving forward.
Okay, one last question from my end. What if the tariffs normalize? What would your strategy be?
The US casting model offers minimizes tariff to the extent that we pay duties on the diamond and labor component. It is extremely lucrative, so we perhaps would most likely continue that moving forward. It's our .com business where the quantum of styles is immense and the unit volume per style is extremely small, one piece per day, you know, 2-3 pieces per day, and let's say 50, 80, 100 pieces, depending on, you know, what day it is. That business, if tariffs subside to a nominal level that our customers would be happy to absorb as well, we would love to move that casting back to India, to, you know, for business continuity as well as an overall advantage to the US consumer, who'll just be able to get their .com orders far, far, far faster than they are currently getting at the moment.
So we would go still with the casting, if I understand?
For commercial or, it, again, see, it's conjecture depending on the rate of tariff. Whatever is agreed upon, we'll evaluate it then. But largely, we will go for continue casting in the US. And for .com, we'll evaluate depending on where the rate stands and our customers' willingness to accept that tariff increment.
Thank you for an elaborate answer, Anmol. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Amish Kanani from Novice Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congrats on a good number. Partly the previous question has answered, U.S. Uncertainty on the tariffs. But if you can just still, give us some range of gross margin number that, we were walking, the second quarter margins was 36 versus last year being 44. And, first half was ranging at 34 versus 39 in last year first half. So we can give us some sense of, where the maybe gross margin will start to help, directionally it will be higher or lower. That's the first question. And so the second question is about domestic brand building, sir. How are we going about, building this brand? Because Origin as a brand is not so well known. Of course, the new store will, and the new opening will give us some, initial buzz. But how will we kind of renew the building of brand, which, will help us the long-term sales, sir?
Thanks, Amishi, and I'll answer the first question on margin guidance. We stick to an EBITDA margin guidance that we usually give of the 18% to 22% broad range. We hope, and we will try our best to deliver on the upside towards this range in H2, given the U.S. casting model that we have employed. But again, we will, for the time being, continue to stick to this margin guidance and, of course, try our best to deliver more. On brand building for Aurigem, again, I think we are at a very small scale today. We're just opened 11 stores, four of which have opened only within the last 1 month, last 30 days. So we have the first cut plan of action is to increase the store fleet and the distribution outlets where Aurigem is present. We hope to do that as soon as possible. I think having national scale and presence will automatically aid to our brand building efforts. And then, of course, the layer on top with marketing, whether that's digital as well as offline, will help to further boost awareness of the brand across the country. So I think that's pretty much the first priority, followed by the next that we are employing, along with the entire team that we have for Aurigem to boost visibility of the brand in the country. To put in context, our store numbers, we comp to everyday fine jewelry players. In the natural diamond space, I believe the largest everyday fine jewelry player is north of 350 stores. The second largest player is north of 300 stores. So we have a lot of scope to expand and gain national presence. And we look forward to acting on this over the coming quarters.
Sure, sir. Sir, another follow-up on this U.S. thing. Yeah.
Mr. Amir, sorry for interrupting. You may rejoin the queue for any follow-ups.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from Gatha Jain from Anand Rathi Skycon. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So I was reading somewhere about diamonds and lab-grown diamonds getting into the semiconductor space. So are we looking somewhere around it? Any comments on that part?
Hi, Mr. Jain. Yeah, so diamonds are a very exciting product. As a material, it is probably the most electrical and thermally conductive material, far better than even silicon. We have no such plans at the moment that are anywhere close to being concrete. We will certainly update the investor community in case of any changes there.
All right, got it. And what are the store economics for Aurigem, like payback period, average sales per store, EBITDA margin, etc.? If you could just throw some light.
So I'll just run you through the exact model that we are following. Effectively, on the balance sheet side, it costs about 3.5 crore-4 crore to open one Aurigem store, 2.5 crore-3 crore of which is directly linked to inventory. In the lab-grown diamond space, about, I would say, 40%+ is actually just gold in terms of that inventory. So over 1.2 crore-1.5 crore is just the gold value of that inventory, which, again, thanks to having Goldiyam's backing and being part of Goldiyam, Aurigem is able to utilize GMLs to push out the payment of this gold to 6 months post-receipt of post-production of jewelry. On the P&L side, our break-evens on general are around 20 lakhs of revenue per store per month. That's what we are seeing, given an approx rental cost and nominal store costs. That's the store-level break-even. We'll be able to provide you detailed numbers on email, but this is where we are in terms of unit economics for the store. If you see about a 40 lakh rupee monthly sale, an average store will pay back its entire investment within less than 3 years. So that's how the model is being built, and we hope to achieve these numbers very soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Ankush Agarwal from Surge Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Can you just share again this 2.8 crores of revenues that you have booked for Aurigem? What would be the rough loss that would be booked?
So I can get back to you. Thank you again, Mr. Ankush, for the question. I can get back to you on email with that. I'll have the exact loss numbers not on my table currently, but I'll be able to get back on email with that.
Okay. And the inventory value is that you have for Origin?
Sorry?
Inventory value that you have for Origin as of Q2 end.
Sorry again, not on my table currently. We have the data, but I'll be able to email it to you. I'll get back to you on our loss for the quarter and the closing inventory for the quarter, including the 4 or 5 stores which opened as well. I have that data with me. Yeah.
Oh, that was all. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can request you to reach out to either DeFerro or to our company secretary, I'll be surely able to reply back with those details.
Sure. I'll do that.
Thank you. Next question is from Vivek Gautam from GS Investments. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Is there any entry barrier in manufacturing of lab-grown diamond, especially with Chinese competition coming in? And as such, there would always be a downward pressure on the lab-grown diamond prices. And China, wherever it has entered, has sort of taken the market share away. So how are we tackling it, sir?
So thank you, Mr. Gautam. China is, in fact, very honestly, the oldest player in the lab-grown diamond industry. Most of their factories grow lab-grown diamonds via technology called HPHT, which results in diamonds that are up to a certain size, you know, more or less 1.5 carat polished size. So that technology has been around. They have existing capacity for decades because these machines were used to grow diamonds erstwhile for industrial use, cutting tool industry, diamond abrasive powder, etc. So they've been actually the oldest players in the lab-grown industry. Today, again, just to clarify, Mr. Gautam, we don't see pressure on the lab-grown prices because of the largest component of cost for diamonds, even up to 2 and 3 carat of size, which is a very large size, is actually just the labor it takes to cut and polish those diamonds. So if we don't, that is all again done in India, and we don't see any reduction below that, regardless of region in where these diamonds are grown, China or India.
And many countries like Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, so much are dependent on the diamond, natural diamond. And basically, in front of our eyes, that their entire industry is being sort of destroyed, and are they sort of taking any steps against lab-grown diamond, anything of that sort?
Nothing to my knowledge, Mr. Gautam. We don't, because again, we are not a diamond cutting and diamond trading company. We don't really interact much with the rough diamond side of the business. Being a predominant jewelry manufacturing and exporting in a retailing company, we're more downstream, closer towards the customer.
So Anmol, I may want to add here, Mr. Gautam, this is Rashesh Bansali. So you have to understand what India needs also. So India is an exporting country for natural diamonds. We used to import rough, and then we do the value addition and we export polish or make jewelry. According to our Honorable Prime Minister, make in India is one of the most important things that we go for. Right now, when we are actually exporting lab-grown diamonds, everything is grown in India. Made in India. There is no foreign exchange that we pay to Botswana, to Namibia, or to London, or anywhere else, right? And the entire foreign exchange gambit stays in India, creating employment within our own country, right? And with a complete back-to-back, channel in growing lab-grown diamonds. So this seriously helps, and there is no threat lab-grown diamonds have over natural diamonds, because for our country, we provide higher value addition than natural diamonds. We provide the employment equal to natural diamonds.
Yeah, thank you. And sir, how has been the response to our Origin stores in the any competition intensity increasing? That's all. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Bhavya Gandhi from Dalal & Broacha Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Just wanted to understand what has led to drop in other expenses that is compared to last year that has fallen. So last year it was closer to 18.5 crores and this quarter it is closer to 15 crores whereas we've opened new stores also. So I thought other expenses should rise.
So thank you for the question, Bhavya. I have pulled out that data. We've had two major areas of other expense reduction. One has been marketing expense and co-ops that we must have incurred with certain customers in the US last year in the quarter. They were not incurred in this quarter in terms of a marketing co-op expense that we did with any retailer. And the second large part also was a sizable part of the decrease was also other manufacturing expenses accounting for certification costs, which were also fallen in the quarter.
Got it. And just one thing, I just missed out on the US casting thing. You said that would lead to better gross margins?
Yes, because we are selling at, we are able to sell at a slightly higher price in order to afford all the expenses in the United States and the casting, additional casting cost. That is sort of, negated by the reduction in tariff and no duty on the gold value of what is being re-exported to the US. Though we have locked in deals with certain customers at slight additional prices. So hopefully we'll be able to provide a slight margin improvement in the coming quarters.
Got it. Fair enough.
Due to sales price.
Okay. Yeah. That's it from my end. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you. Next, we have another follow-up from Dixit Doshi from Whitestone Financial Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. My question is regarding the growth. So this growth which we are seeing in B2B, if you can elaborate, is it more due to the increase in the wallet share or over last couple of years or even last 12 months, we are able to get the more customers? Also, connecting to that, we had that jewel fleet which we have launched and, we were targeting the mom and pop stores in the U.S. So how has been the response there? Are we able to crack that model or not?
Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Doshi. So the wallet share, also the growth in revenue has come, I would say, predominantly from wallet share, but also additions of some new customers in other geographies. Because we particularly focus on corporate customers, any new customer addition, especially in the United States, provides a sizable revenue increment. And in general, as we've mentioned in prior calls as well, we see a lot of scope of growth with our existing customer base as well by just deepening our wallet share in terms of categories we sell to, as well as number of units in each category that belong to Goldian. So the focus is utilizing our design strength and execution strength to provide growth via this channel, while of course also trying our best to add on new corporate customers wherever possible. Regarding Jewel Fleet, that business vertical, we sort of passed it over to a wholesaler and it's now integrated with that wholesaler's sales. So we're not focusing, it's been over a year since we've really focused on that and part of the wholesalers regular orders that we keep receiving from them.
Okay, and my last question is, you mentioned about, getting on board some retailers in Israel, Middle East, Australia. So if you can just broadly touch upon how big are those retailers in terms of number of stores or any other metrics?
So some of them are, I would say all of them, in fact, are medium scale. They are amongst the leaders in their regions, but not, of course, not comparing to the United States. So we believe, though, some of these retailers, their supplier base is smaller. So incrementally, being part of their supplier base, doing our job well in terms of quality and delivery should result in, visible revenue growth coming in from there too. So we're looking forward to build on some of these accounts.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, we will take that as our last question for the day. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
I want to thank all the participants for joining us today. If you have any further queries or need additional information, please feel free to contact Deferio Consulting, our investor relations team. Thank you all and have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Monarch Network Capital Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you once again for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.